Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wise Men Say, Sun FM Preview Show, with Stephen Goldsmith and Gareth Barker. All things Sunderland.
Hello and welcome along to the Wise Men Say Preview Show on Sun FM. Here tonight with Graham Anderson in the studio, who's going to have a little bit of a chat with us about his contribution to the new Tales from the Red and White book, as well as other things Sunderlandy. Gary Foster's here as well from the Wise Men Say team.
Evening.
Put your microphones up, that would help, wouldn't it?
One, two.
Well, Stephen's on here, as you can obviously tell, because I'm doing this, and I'm like sort of a really bad octopus. An octopus with some sort of
Jean-Michel Jarre.
Sort of like stumpy tentacles.
Without the music.
I can't really get to the controls. Being tall, you see, it's terrible. I'm not sitting down, you see. We like to do these things standing up to try and bring some energy to the proceedings.
It's not a visual medium, Gareth.
No, it's... thank the Lord for that. But yes, so, as I said, Graham Anderson's here. Obviously, most of you remember him from his time at the Sunderland Echo, but obviously he's been in the studio plenty of times since then and freelance now. But I'm sure you're aware, if you're a big Sunderland fan, that there was a book, The Tales from Red and White, which is the original volume. Second volume is out very soon, out now, is it, to buy online?
It depends whether people listen to the podcast. It's the book launches on Friday night, and then it's out in the shops on the Saturday. So the book launches at Quinn's Bar in the Stadium of Light. And if we go out before then, people can still walk up and pee on the door, get a book and a free glass of wine or beer or whatever, and meet some of the people, some of the players who contributed to it. There's 11 players, 11 positions, and the majority will be there tomorrow to talk about their time at Sunderland.
So you did, was it? You had Stefan Schwartz, Tony Courton.
Yeah. I went to London to interview Stefan Schwartz. I went to Dublin to interview Stephen Elliott. I interviewed Martin Scott in Sunderland College, and I interviewed Tony Courton at the tennis centre in Stockton. So a bit, you know, it was a bit random.
It was all
a bit random. His daughter plays tennis, and she came for some tournaments, so it was better than driving down to Birmingham. But it was a lot of fun to do, and it isn't a best 11 or anything like that. It was just, we tried it. So you have Tony Courton, who played 12 games for Sunderland, and Gordon Armstrong, who played 400. You've got Stan Anderson, who was is the earliest one there, and Stephen Elliott under Roy Keane's kind of is the latest player who was involved. And it was just players that we just thought, you know, there's one for every position all the way through the team. And it was just players that collectively, my co-authors are Lance Hardy, who people remember did Stoke or Sunderland in 73 and was the original editor of the first volume. And Rob Mason, the former, I mean, when I heard Rob was not going to be full-time at the club anymore, I wanted to bring him in. And Rob's done three chapters. It was just all people we thought would make an interesting story. People who probably are quite well-known names, but the stories we were kind of aware of behind the stories that people thought might find interesting.
So what kind of things can we expect? Just a bit of a flavour from some of the stuff that some of the people like you've spoken to. Is there anything in there you can reveal without spoiling things? Anything to look out for if you're going to buy the book or come along to tomorrow night, as it is the Friday night, the 18th of November at the Stadium of Light, and have a listen to what people are going to be talking about?
Well, with Tony, Stefan Schwartz, I just thought, well, I always quite like Stefan. And
space contract, I'm sure, must have been discussed.
Well, it gets a mention, but it's the thing is, it's a bit like Talkins, isn't it? There's almost a Talkin fatigue. 25 years ago, I remember when I first started the Echo, 26, 27 years ago, I remember reviewing books saying, this is fantastic, there's a book on Sunderland, like, it's come out. And now the shelves are full of Sunderland books. It's the same with Talkins. Didn't you seem to have that many Talkins, and now they're flooded with Talkins. And when you get the Talkins, sometimes you can almost reel off the
standards.
Bawley sitting the bar in the Derby, Kevin. There's the standard stories, and that was what we wanted to do with the book, was to not do those. So I've made reference to the space contract with Stefan Schwartz, but it's about different things in his career, which I found were interesting. Tony Courton, for example, I was obviously covering the club when Tony Courton was there, but he just seemed to disappear off the radar one day. He got the bad leg break. And because he wasn't in the team, he just kind of disappeared. But he had interesting stories to tell. And the same goes for Martin Scott. It was more of the idea was to get more of an insight into the people. And Stephen Elliott was an interesting one in the sense that when he was here, he was like 21-year-old, and you forget he's just a kid. He's 33 now, but he's a different bloke. And when I remember when I was interviewing them, he was a nice guy, but he was so shy. And like now, he's kind of keen to talk about these things that happened. So there's lots of interesting different stuff in there.
He's just signed for Morpeth, actually.
He has, and I've got him involved with it. It gets a bit incestuous, but I got him involved in a company which Martin Scott runs, who's also in the book, Inbrotech Soccer is training. And with Stephen, he married a Sunderland lass, and he wanted to move back to the northeast. He's relocated to be over here. He feels that Sunderland's as much his home as Ireland is these days. So we were looking for a team for him when he came back. I thought he was going to go for South Shields, which would have been even better because you'd have had Martin Scott at South Shields as assistant manager.
Julio.
But it turned out to be Morpeth. So, I think it's a very good signing for Morpeth.
Yeah, well, if he's back, we'll have to get him in, won't we?
Definitely.
He owes us one now because he dropped us in it for Saturday because he's supposed to be doing the show at the Peacock.
Got
signed for Morpeth instead, so, you know.
Well, there's a book signing at 12:30 at the stadium. And I thought he couldn't be there because of it's at the in the club shop. I thought he couldn't be there because of the Morpeth thing, so I kind of ruled him out. But there's talk about that he might be there. So if he's there and not at the podcast, there could be hell on, couldn't
there? There will be hell on. I'll be there tomorrow night, so I'll take
send
the task.
A spy over. You know,
task.
Could you sign this, Stephen? And by the way, why aren't you at your podcast?
Exactly. Well, on that note, anyway, we've got David Priest, who's kindly stepped in and managed to cajole him into
safe making pair it. Of hands.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I've managed to cajole him in. He's been watching Tottenham at Wembley, I think, every week because he likes Hugo Lloris. But now he's caved in. He's going to come up to the Millwall game and watch us set the record for 20 consecutive home games without a win. So, ooh. You know, I mean, you've got to be there for when the history's made.
Get your T-shirts made.
Funny Roy Castle was still around. Record breakers.
Exactly. Well, at the table, there'd be a chapter in there on Sunderland, wouldn't there?
Yeah.
There probably is this year.
Special programme.
But anyway, we're going to go away and we'll come back and we'll chat about the managerial situation. And there's probably two or three people in the book who've probably been linked with the job. So, you know, we'll come on to that next.
Wise Men Say, Sun FM Preview Show, with Stephen Goldsmith and Gareth Barker, all things Sunderland.
Yeah, so I know that obviously in the summer there was a lot of rumours about Stefan Schwartz and putting together a consortium to buy the club, and I know that when we had Gordon Armstrong with us in the Peacock, he was saying, oh, he was maybe involved in an advisory role in some sort of consortium that was looking to buy the club. Then there was rumours that Stefan might have thrown his hat into the ring amongst the many, many hats we've experienced over the last 2 weeks. The ring overfloweth with hats. But, you know, do you think Stefan was interested in the job? He's somebody you've spoken to a few times. I don't know if you want to reveal
Stefan was interested in the job. And I was on Twitter about an overseas manager who was also interested in the job, who wasn't Chris Coburn, who wasn't Michael O'Neill, as it turns out. But he'd received a call saying thanks for the application. But we're looking at making a decision. You know, I think the phrase the person used on the phone to him was, hopefully we've made the right decision. I don't think there was that much doubt in it. You know, it's one of the sort of things you'd say if you were turning somebody else down, you know, hopefully we made the right decision. But I think the implication was that they had kind of made the decision, so they'd approached someone. So the likes of Stefan, I know he would have been interested. Had he received encouragement? We heard Dwight York. There's a few people who took their names in the ring. But I think those stories are kind of past the post of it now because it looks as though someone are ready to appoint.
They're ready to appoint?
Well,
the managers that want to appoint are ready to be appointed.
Well, they might have appointed by the time the podcast goes out, but at the time of recording this, Chris Coleman's just shot into the... down to nothing in the bookies. So that's often a sign. But then again, sometimes I'm so cynical sometimes. I know he's in talks with the Welsh FA about extending his contract, and he's gone on record as saying he wants to continue with the golden generation. So being a cynical old hack, you sort of sometimes think, well, is this someone just putting this stuff out to try and up Chris Coleman's ratings with the Welsh FA and get them to push them for that.
Oh, surely an agent wouldn't do anything as unscrupulous as that.
So I don't know. I mean, the only thing you can do with this is kind of wait and see. That's all you can do. So, I mean, when I was writing for the Echo, I was almost a bit bored with the speculation going on. You just want to know what's going to go on. And I do think the club is open to a bit of criticism. The club will argue it's taking its time over the appointment, blah, blah, blah. But I think the fans are entitled to think, you know, you sacked Simon Graceman after a match. Literally within seconds after a match, it would imply you were somewhere down the road. Most journalists thought at the time that we would see Robbie Stockdale caretaken for the Borough game. Should have chosen Bawley, by the way, but don't open that. It's a different kind of worms. I think it's a bad mistake to have chosen Bawley for that role. I think you've been perfect for Borough and perfect for the Millwall game.
Well, we've got Villa on Tuesday.
Yeah,
after that
I don't think necessarily he might not be the man for the job, but I do think that historically Bawley hasn't been treated well in terms of the situations he's been put in. I think he has something to give. I think you've been great in the changing room. I think you'd have at least had an authority that in those changing rooms that Robbie Stockdale hasn't got. But either way, regardless of that, we all kind of thought, well, you'd probably have Robbie Stockdale deal there for the Borough game and the new manager in the stands or at least kind of almost been announced, and it's been a fortnight since then, and you're facing the prospect of Robbie being in charge. I don't even think Robbie wants to be in charge himself particularly, but you face the prospect of Robbie being in charge for the Millwall game and, like you say, maybe even the Villa game. So I do think the one thing you can say is you would have hoped that Sunderland might have acted more quickly, but if they make the right appointment, they'll be forgiven for that.
Well, I mean, in theory, Gary, I mean, the comment Graham has made obviously about the timing of Grayson's departure, you know, did raise eyebrows. But I mean, there's a little bit of logic there, isn't there, in that they'd probably want to have spared him the embarrassment of going out and you know, sitting in front of the press getting all the questions about, you know, is your job in danger, and then being sacked the next day or whatever. I guess, you know, it was concise, but I think we would all have thought that there would have been somebody lying in wait. Now, we discussed this, obviously it's been 2 weeks since we've last done a show, or a preview show anyway, and at the time we had the discussion and I said I didn't think we'd have anybody appointed today, and that is the case. It's disappointing but unsurprising, is it not?
It's very Sunderland, isn't it, for want of a better way to put it. If we're going to sack Grayson if they don't beat Bolton, then there's a discussion already being had to say, look, if you don't beat Bolton tonight or it's not satisfactory performance tonight, then we're going to give him the push. So that discussion's been had. So if you've had that discussion, then surely your next discussion that leads on from there is, right, who do we want? Who are we going to get? Now, for 2 weeks on, they're still apparently, I mean, if they know who they want, then they've managed to keep it very quiet, but to still not know who's going to be in charge. The whole point was that, oh, they've done it now, and we've got the whole international break sorted out after the Borough game, and yet we're still not sorted out. We're still guessing. We're still wondering. We're hearing stories about they want this one, they want that one. He's a contender. And then we're hearing stories, they don't want to touch it with a barge pole, or they're not considering it, or they're worried about taking it. It's just... It opens the club up to a lot more criticism, either fairly or unfairly, and it makes the club look slightly amateurish.
Slightly. I think that's where I think they missed a trick with Bawley. Had they put Bawley in, the fans would have accepted Bawley, even the ones who don't think he's necessarily a good manager. You put him in, and fans have been rolling up the Millwall tomorrow, shaking their head, sort of going, you know, well, I guess it's another week with Bawley in charge. But they would have accepted that. They would have, you know, they would have worn that.
It could have changed things.
Exactly. Whereas Robbie Stockdale's never been a manager. You've got a novice in charge, and he's a nice guy, Robbie, but I can't imagine him sort of, you know, either rattling cages or imposing discipline or sort of getting people fired up in the changing room. No disrespect to Robbie, but having Robbie Stockdale in charge for a second game, you know, for one game could be regarded as, you know, sort of unfortunate. For two games, just careless.
Well, the bizarre thing about Stockdale as well, sort of slight tangent, but obviously Elliot Dickman's the under-23s coach. Then last year when we were in that Checker Trade Trophy, I was at Andy Welsh at the time, I can't remember which one it was, but it was like, oh well, Robbie's going to manage the team for the Checker Trade Trophy. Like, why? He wasn't a manager in the under-23s. He wasn't a manager, you know, in the first team. He's a first team coach. He's not an under-23s coach. It was just really strange. And then now, obviously, he's kind of, it just goes to show the thinking across the board seems a little bit unusual.
The other strange thing is, it's probably only Sunderland that haven't been able to keep hold of a caretaker manager. Billy McKinley's gone and say, Billy, we want you to stay there until we get Billy. Oh no, Billy's gone.
Yeah, join the other harem of caretaker managers now. Sorry, the first team coach selection at West Ham. He's certainly surrounded himself with probably three candidates for the job that. The Sunderland job, isn't it?
It's just poor, and sort of like, I mean, sort of if the headline's written for the weekend of Lions led, you know, Lions versus Donkeys. I think I can see it now. I can see sort of Sunderland. I mean, I know every time I come on here, you accuse me of being pessimistic, and the results make me seem not to be the case. But I'd be, I'm going to the game, and I'd be amazed if Sunderland get anything out of it. And I know that Millwall haven't been great and all the rest of it, but I just sort of think that the way Sunderland are at the moment. I'd love to see them win, but I think probably if you've been optimistic, a draw is more of the likely result, because they've seen at the moment to pitch their performances at a level below the opposition. If the opposition are good, Sunderland are not quite good enough, and if the opposition are bad, Sunderland seem to take their game down a notch. You know what I mean? They're in that awful place that I've seen Sunderland teams go to before, and it needs either a new manager who's really, really capable, or a new manager, plus preferably a new owner who can inject more money into it and change things around. That's all I can see that's going to change the spiral that Sunderland are in.
I mean, on that point about Millwall as well, I mean, like you say, they're not in great form. We'll come and talk. We'll talk about that game in a bit more detail later. But you look at it, and it's an ideal opportunity. You know, there's been plenty of ideal opportunities.
We've had a few, haven't we?
You get the new manager in, you try and get a bit of a lift around the place if you get the right person, and it might give the fans a lift, whoever that might be. I'm talking theoretically here, because let's be honest, I don't think any of the names that have been linked with the job generally have seemed to have united the supporters and people going, we definitely want him. It's just been pockets of people saying, well, he would be a good choice because of X, Y and Z. But if you got the right person in with a personality to lift the place, get a few more bums on seats, you know, you get into that game, and Sunderland, I think there's been a Rizzler paper between the two teams in most of the games we've played this season, and mistakes that Sunderland have, you know, committed have it cost them the games. I don't think we've ever been heavily outplayed in any of the games we've played. We've just shot ourselves in the foot. You know, you never know. The new manager comes in, players get a lift, a good performance, a win. All of a sudden, you've got that home win monkey is gone. The new manager's got a win. You've got a game on the Tuesday night to look forward to then, to try and build on something, get some momentum going. I just feel as though they've missed an opportunity. I don't know what you feel about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's Sunderland all over, isn't it? It's just, it's a case of you get this opportunity and then you wait, and it passes you by, you know what I mean? It's just say, how many games do you give it before you see, right, the new man's in charge, now he's got enough time to turn it around. All right, there's still a lot of football to be played before the end of the season, but every game is an opportunity missed. It doesn't matter who it's against. In this division, most teams are capable on their day of beating most other teams in this division, so every game you pass, so whether it's Millwall Saturday or it's Villa during the week, there's another two chances you had of getting 6 points, like 3 points each, 6 points. There's another 6 points that you possibly won't get that you may have. There's nothing to say you definitely would have, but the new guy had an opportunity to come in, get them fired up. Millwall not playing particularly well, you know, bounce off the new manager, you know, we're wasting time and we're wasting opportunities, and not Sunderland all over, unfortunately, at the minute.
And as well, that, you know, the managers we've been linked with, the interesting comment that seems to be coming out through media channels might not necessarily be correct, but the suggestion is Paul Heckenbottom's stolen because of January transfer funds. Michael O'Neill wasn't in. I don't know what was going on there. We were interested, we weren't interested. Either way,
there's a suggestion that the Sunderland have approached him and he's turned them down because of the January transfer funds.
I think this is quite interesting that Sunderland, I would think, have pitched their search at managers who could probably come in and look at what we've got in place and on a minimal budget improve the team this season and get us out of the relegation zone. But the managers we've approached to do that job on that basis seem to be looking at Sunderland and going, it's like somebody's got a big house, well, they must be rich. No, but the mortgage is massive, so they probably haven't got as much money as you think. So they're kind of waltzing up to the club thinking, oh, brilliant, I'm going to get 15, 20 million to spend in January and we're going to do this. Sunderland probably wouldn't be looking at the managers they're looking at if they had that budget. They'd be looking at a different level of manager, so they're in a bit of a conundrum at the moment.
I think the managers, the prospective managers, are all realistic. They'll know there'll be not much to spend. They're probably shocked by how little there is to spend. But I think more importantly than that is that for managers now, Sunderland must hold the fear factor. I mean, there are a number of managers have gone through, and top names as well, and now especially after Simon Grayson's gone after three months, who I never thought was the man for the Sunderland job, but he's only been there 3 months and he's gone, and he was deemed as exactly the sort of person you're talking about, Gareth, someone who's a capable championship manager who could do things on a budget. If you're a manager and you're thinking about applying to Sunderland, you're going to have to think very, very carefully if you've got any stock whatsoever, because you could come to Sunderland and be out of a job within 3 months or 6 months or 9 months at the very maximum. So it's going to be a factor with people like Michael O'Neill or people like Paul Heckenbottom, who's been mentioned, or a few other names who've been mentioned, that you're going to have to be worried taking over Sunderland. It's becoming a bit of a poison chalice in football.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think there's also the suggestion I made the other day was, if you're Paul Heckenbottom, you're doing quite kindly at Barnsley, it's your hometown club, your stock's quite high with them. Probably, you know, if you don't get a couple of results, they're unlikely to be on your back. You come to Sunderland and you've got this possibility that the club could be sold, so you might not be the choice of the new owners if they come in. You've got this possibility that you're jumping ship where you're quite settled and everything's going quite well, to come in to a bit of a storm and try and turn it around. If you're a big name, or you're an established name like Moyes or somebody like that, you can maybe take a Sunderland defeat or a Sunderland job and sacking on your CV and still job for the boys. You'll get the West Ham thing's been proved. Moyes' last few managerial appointments have been absolutely woeful, but apparently, you know, he's rewrote history. It was never his fault. None of it was his fault.
Managers do that.
They do.
Well, and I reckon Allardyce has been briefed. He must have, you know, the managers' union, because he's basically backed up Simon Grayson this week. He's backed up David Moyes. I mean, we're talking.
But the thing is that the point I'm trying to make is, if Moyes got sacked from Sunderland, he always knew there's probably going to be another offer sooner or later. He always knew that if he couldn't do that, there's television to go into. If he couldn't do that, then the BBC will have him on the radio. You know, like a Heckenbottom or Paul Hurst, if you want to put another name on that. If they get sacked, and Simon Grayson, I dare say their opportunities would be far more limited than anything, you know, that likes a Moyes and that's going to get. So they've got to take that into consideration. Heckenbottom's got to think, if I go to Sunderland and it doesn't work out, how long is it going to be before I can get myself back on the managerial merry-go-round? He's going to have to wait a lot longer than Moyes, unless he goes much further down the league and starts all over again. That's got to be a consideration for any manager looking at coming in.
Do you not think, though, if there's doubt in his mind at any point, he should just rule it out straight away? Because I think if you go into a job like Sunderland with that mentality, and don't start well, you're going to get the same old from the manager. Well, you know, it's difficult. We're working on a tight budget.
Yeah.
You know, all the excuses will come out, and then we'll end up with a situation again where it's all poor old Paul Hurst, poor old Paul Heckenbottom.
What you need is you need a chief executive of real quality, and I don't know whether Sunderland have got one or not. We need a chief executive of real quality to find a manager that he is absolutely convinced has got real quality about them, even if they're not a big name so far, but they've got real quality, and put them in there and leave them and say, you know what, if we get relegated, we're going to get relegated, but this is the guy who's going to rebuild us. This is the guy who's going to, if he has to quit, strip all the bare basics and we get relegated, we believe in this guy. He can spend 3 or 4 years building this club, and that person needs that space. And if you give a person that sort of space and that patience and make it clear that he's got the full backing of everybody and they believe in him, then the chances are that person will succeed. But the key thing is, you've got to get the right manager. You know, you've got to get the right manager, and that's a big question mark.
It certainly is a massive question. The question mark at the moment. But Graham's got to skedaddle, mm-hmm. because he's got to go somewhere.
Well, I'm freelance these days. I've got clients, so
he's got important things to do.
Despite the astonishingly large fee for being here, I've got to go for some paid work now.
Yeah. can I come with you? But yeah, so when we come back, we're going to play the game we haven't played in a while, actually, where we're going to guess the team from a previous home game against Millwall.
Oof.
So that's going to be fun for you, Gary, because the pressure's going to be on you on your own, because Michael Luff didn't turn up tonight claiming that he thought he was on Monday.
What season was that then?
It was just 04-05 when we won the league under Mick McCarthy.
At least one of those people in the book.
Exactly. So, but don't spoil it, because you're going. You can't give them clues and then nick off.
I was hoping it was going to be the one where Mr. Crabtree turned up with a sunlit coat on while we were walking back to the train, but that's another story altogether.
Well, maybe you can tell it after this. Anyway, we'll come back in a minute.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Wise Men Say, Sun FM Preview Show, with Stephen Goldsmith and Gareth Barker, all things Sunderland.
Yeah, so you can elaborate on that story if you want, Gary. We need to fill some time, because Graham's gone. We've got 20 minutes to entertain the masses.
Right, well,
can we achieve it?
We're going to try. So what happened was, obviously, Millwall, anybody knows anything about football, will know about...
You're in the wrong place.
Millwall sort of, what shall I say, a reputation for being a warm and friendly club and having warm and friendly supporters. So the club got permission, the club staff got permission not to wear the colours to the game in case it caused any fracas or any unfriendlies. So everybody made sure they were wearing no colours and that as we got off the train and were led down a cage into the stadium. Except for Simon Crabtree, who was broadcast at the time, I think he was from Metro at the time, Crabbers, who turned up in a massive club coat with a massive badge on. Needless to say, nobody wanted to sit next to Simon on the train on the way there
Did he arrive unscathed?
Yeah, we got on all right. We got there and there was enough police horses out the front to run the Grand National, so we got in amongst them and got led into the stadium. Completely unscathed, which was nice.
Was that the evening game by any chance?
It was a Saturday afternoon game. It was the game where the wonderful Jason Matatia came out after the game into the hordes of press and came out with the lines. Dennis Wise is a cheat. He's always been a cheat. Everybody knows he's a cheat. His whole family are probably cheats. And we were all standing there with our notepads and pens going, this is great stuff, this. It was also the same one that Martin Stewart accused Kevin Muscat of cheating because he was making a whistle sound like the referee's whistle and we kept stopping during the game. So there was a bit of bad blood after the game, but in the press conference afterwards, Mr. Matatia made his thoughts on Mr. Wise completely clear.
Well, on that note, the one of the men, the key men in this game, in the game we're going to talk about, attendance, interesting. Guess what the attendance was? It was the 13th game we played that season. It was the 16th of October 2004, so 13 years ago. And the attendance for the game, do you want to hazard a guess?
Was it midweek or was it?
I don't know. Saturday? No, it's Saturday.
Saturday. 38,600 miles off.
23,839.
I was being optimistic.
So when people talk about the attendances,
yeah,
you know, and I think that was a key feature at that time. You know, that you know, maybe it wasn't as good as people, maybe some people thought. But anyway, the game, Sunderland 1, Millwall 0. The man you mentioned featured prominently in that, he scored the own goal, Kevin Muscat.
Right.
It's much to the, I'm sure, the delight of the squad remaining from the.
Yes, he was a lovely chap, Kevin. He fitted that club perfectly well.
Yeah.
As did Dennis Wise, really.
Yeah, they had a few. Well, interestingly, Dennis Wise was player manager. We might try that. Don't know. Yeah, I'll check my phone just in case we've appointed. Don't know.
Who could we have as player manager?
O'Shea, yeah, someone like that. That would probably be a thing that we'd do. But yes, so do you think you could hazard a guess at that team?
Ooh.
Or some of them? We can't have too many silences here because it would be boring. Right. Usually we have people chipping in. So
Sorensen wouldn't it be?
Long gone that. Come on, switch on. Poor start.
Oh, I know. I told you my memory's shopping for.
Well, this is going to be great.
It's going to be great. Well,
two great goalkeepers. So they might actually get in at the moment. At the time for that level, one of them went on to Arsenal.
Oh well, that's an easy one, I think. Poom.
Correct, Mark Poom.
So he was playing around the same.
John Oster described this player, the fullback, one of the worst players he's ever played with.
So either Williams or Holloway.
No, it was Mark Lynch.
Just one of the few times I won't argue with John Oster.
A left back, Sunderland stalwart. It left back for years through that period. Very popular player, Northern Ireland international.
Northern Ireland international, you've got.
Come on, it's terrible. George McCartney.
If he'd said rap music and big cars, I would have gotten it straight away.
Does he like that? I didn't
know. Oh, he used to drive about in a Hummer, did George?
Did he? Okay.
Most white man you've ever met.
Well, there you go. In midfield, we'll do centre back. Sorry, we had two Scots at centre half.
Caldwell.
Correct, Steve Caldwell.
One of the Collins.
Neil Collins, yeah. Correct, in midfield.
That's going to keep giving us clues.
Come on, Collins, at the time.
Who was skipper at the time? Matt Piper.
Played in the Premier League this season for Huddersfield Town.
Oh, the water carrier. Team Whitehead.
And alongside...
Was the blonde bombshell playing then?
I can't see him on there, but know that he was alongside in midfield. Scored against Norwich, I remember, in the season he signed. I'm trying to think of significant things he did. Didn't really do a lot when we got promoted. Actually scored the goal in the final game of the season, that season against Stoke, when we won 1-0 and celebrated the championship. On to play for Toronto, I believe. I think he managed Vancouver Whitecaps.
Oh, God.
This is probably terrible radio.
It probably is, I can see the guy's face, but I can't remember.
Do you want to tell you who it is? Yeah, Carl Robinson.
Yeah, the one who always gets confused with the Milton Keynes.
Yeah, we also had... I'm trying to work out. It looks like a 4-3-3, this does. The gentleman who missed a penalty quite badly against Crystal Palace in midfield.
Lovely Jeff.
Jeff Whitley. Jeff, front three, looks like through the middle. Have a guess.
Front three, what that time?
One of them could have played left back, played centre midfield, still playing now. Plays for South Shields.
Oh, Julio.
Julio. Through the middle, his dad played for Sunderland.
Oh, Chris Brown.
And the other lad was signed on loan, probably played about six games, signed him on loan from Leeds United.
I should get this and I can't remember his name.
I haven't prepared for this at all, so do you not think my stats clues are quite impressive?
Fantastic. I wouldn't have gotten them without them. Yeah. We would have been studying it all night. With me.
This is Michael Luff's fault, by the way, so feel free to at him. Michael Luff, 95, you can at him and criticise him for making us drag this out.
For leaving us.
Simon Johnson.
God, he was terrible, wasn't he?
Yeah, this bench that day is actually pretty decent.
Did
I wonder if we had some injuries.
Is that the same one?
I don't know who he played for. I don't know. But we had on the bench that day Thomas Myra, Darren Carter, Liam Lawrence, Marcus Stewart, and Michael Bridges.
Why would you play Simon Johnson and Marcus Stewart?
And Liam Lawrence.
And
well, not Michael Bridges on his second. Darren Carter as well. It was excellent. You probably
yeah,
have him
I
instead
love
of Jeff.
Darren, I
you
love
probably have him instead of Jeff Whitley.
I love Darren Carter. Yeah, as a
so Mick McCarthy was the manager, of course, a man who some people have suggested might come back to get us out of this.
Well, he's always been. It's strange, isn't it? Because he had such a bad time at Sunderland, but he's always been very complimentary about the club, and always said, like, even I think he even said the other week that if he wasn't in a job, then he'd jump at the chance to come back to Sunderland, which is bizarre, really, when you consider how badly things went for him. I mean, yeah. He wasn't given much support at all. To be fair to him, he was sort of brought in to, again, do what we're doing now. Can you help us? But we don't want to spend anything.
Well. We'll do some Twittery questions as right. well. What do you think about it? We should have probably had Graham in the studio.
Yes.
I guess you can count because you were a journalist as well. Talk about the terrible journalism during this manager hunt, Bain keeping us in limbo and fan turmoil. And on the back, that was from SEFC, at SEFC. And there was another one on the kind of on the tail of that sort of thing, which I can't find. You can answer the question about terrible journalism, since what right. do you think it's fair criticism now? And obviously when Graham was around, it's been particularly, it was a lot easier for people to get information because you had the personal contacts. Now it's like locked down and filtered.
God, yeah. I mean, when I like to go back to the good old days when I was a lad, when I first started, you used to have players' mobile numbers, you used to have players' home numbers, so you'd give them a ring after training. And then all of a sudden somebody designed this thing called a press officer at football clubs. And these people, well, they hang about. If you want anything doing, you'll have to go through us. And now, you know, sometimes you can be stood in a tunnel waiting to speak to players after the game, and they'll just put their headphones on and walk straight past you, or they'll just look at you and say, no, not speaking to you today. Mm. And not a great deal you can do. Sometimes it's because they've been badly treated and they feel they've been unjustly treated by the press. I can understand that. Sometimes it just can't be bothered. Sometimes it's because the result didn't go their way. But it's really difficult nowadays. And the worst, obviously, we've got 24/7 news coverage now. Not on, sound like an American, but we've got like, and now you've got to put something on the web, and we have this clickbait thing, which I don't like at all. It's one of the reasons I don't miss the journalism at all. We've got this clickbait where you've got to lead somebody into 1,700 adverts before they get the story.
You say that on that point, you won't believe the opinions that I have got to share when we come back after this. No, I'm not going to do that. It was a clickbait show. Yeah, yeah. Gareth had an opinion on the Wise Men Say podcast. You wouldn't believe what it was. ...
Yes. Yeah. Tune in next week.
No, yeah, yeah. Revealed. Gary Foster's views on the new Sunderland manager.
And you know, like you say, because you haven't got the contacts that we used to have. I think a lot of it's second guessing, or maybe just making stuff up sometimes to get something out there.
On that point, at Mobile Macam says, is a club statement needed to dampen all of the fan hysteria that's occurring in response to the media filling the information vacuum with rubbish? He doesn't say rubbish. He uses a naughty word that we won't say on the radio. It's disgusting language. Mobile Mac, and be ashamed of yourself. But on that point,
doesn't kiss his mother with that mouth.
What, you know, at what point is, you know, it's all, like you say, it's 24/7 news coverage. It's constant. It's rammed down your throat, and not just from your club, from every other club, which creates a pressure. You know. Well, if they're doing this, we should be doing this. If they're doing that, we should be doing that. At what point does kind of football club go, we almost need to get in on this and sort of react to it? I mean, it's a difficult balance. I can understand where he's coming from, but it might set a dangerous precedent if every time something like this happens.
It's sort of died down.
Every time something like this happens, which quite often with Sunderland when we're looking for a manager.
It sort of died down a bit, and just when it, not so many years ago now, clubs were putting their own like content on their websites, the same sort of stuff along the lines that journalists would do. That seems to have died down a bit now. They're not really doing the newsy stuff as much now. It's more featured kind of stuff. I guess the difficulty they've got in terms of making a statement on the current situation, as far as we're aware, and I say as far as we're aware with our amazing sources, Paul Heckenbottom remains one of the top choices. However, as far as legally and whatever, they haven't spoken to Barnsley. So I don't suppose they can come out and say, look, this is who we're after. Don't worry about any other speculation. We know what we're doing, when they haven't spoken to Barnsley and they haven't gotten permission.
Well, how did he have an interview? Just pop out, or just go and the cones are broken. I'm going to pop down there. Well, sports shop and get some new cones. Like, I'm in Leeds in an interview with someone.
It's happened loads over the years, isn't it? I mean, like Brian Clough sometimes used to sign players in greasy spoons on motorway cafes and stuff like that. Well,
in casinos, though.
Well, yeah. Or the dog might have signed them, we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
Look, I'm not saying there's been no contact between the club and Paul Heckenbottom. I'm sure they'll come out and say there hasn't been, because you've got to do things properly. But we know players get tapped up. We know managers get tapped up. It's part and parcel of the game. You can go and speak to representatives. I think Graham said earlier, one of the guys who might have been interested in the job didn't get a chance to speak to the club, but obviously they'd spoken to his representatives beforehand. So, you know, there's always ways of getting in touch and sounding people out. But it's difficult to put a statement out when there's nothing happening. I guess if it was some sort of outrageous statement like Diego Maradona, Sunderland's next new gaffer, the club could come out and say in a statement, we're not supporting Diego and we've got no intentions of speaking to Diego.
Maybe we should. I mean, it'd be fun, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, we could
it would be fun.
Well, it'd certainly be lively, wouldn't it?
It would be. I mean, I'm leaning towards the
ridiculous,
the banter appointment now. We're going to appoint an idiot and have a bit of fun as we flail. I think that surely is the way to go now.
It is. I mean, the other way to do it is with this wonderful phenomenon that is the internet and what have you, is you could appoint a foreign manager with a fancy sounding name who hasn't done anything or has just come into management, and there'd be a YouTube video somewhere of all his accomplishments and stuff like that. Everybody would be like, he's brilliant, it's just the guy we need. You've never seen him manage. You know, it's a bit like the Paul Hurst one. I'm not sure how many of the people who were championing Paul Hurst, is he's the right man to get us up and stuff like that. I'm not sure how many of them watched Shrewsbury Town. I said, I don't think I've ever watched Shrewsbury Town
in my life.
So, how much you know about these guys and how much anybody knows about these guys, it's just, you know, people are just desperate for something to happen. You know, we're all just waiting and hoping that something soon will happen. And then we can either go, oh my God, that's terrible, or well, we'll bat him, or oh yes, brilliant. Yeah. But at the minute, everybody's just sort of hanging and looking for the... So while we get back to the journalism thing, while we're all saying it's poor journalism and they're not telling us anything we don't know, everybody's still looking, because everybody still wants to know.
Well, my view, just to sort of round it off, because SAFC North Yorkshire says, anyone else as bored as I am when I search for a manager, it is... Because you go to bed thinking, oh, get up next morning, there'll be a bit of news. Nothing.
Yeah.
Just a lot. Today we've had, I mean, at least Ali McCoy wants it. I mean, you know, we could have somebody who wanted it, even though it would be disaster. But, and fair play to him, and Phil Neville as well, has come out and said, it's a great opportunity.
Do you know where Phil Neville's let himself down, though? He hasn't got himself on the Alan Brazil show. Because that's the new recruitment agency. This week he's been talking up Moisey for West Ham. Yeah. He was talking up Allardyce for Everton. And this morning it was like, Ali, do you want the Sunderland job? Yeah, go on.
You should be listening to Simon and Danny in the morning.
Gary. I do apologise.
Come on.
Right.
Switch on. But what I was going to say is what frustrates me slightly, just to finish, is, you know, I feel as though some of these managers, and this isn't trying to sound like who do you think you are, you know, being arrogant, but if you can't see a club like Sunderland as an opportunity to do something special, then I wouldn't even bother coming. You know, don't come here thinking, oh well, you know, I've got an easy get out if I fail, because I can just blame everything else that other managers have blamed. You know, don't do us a favour as fans, and don't bother turning up, because we've had enough of it. So only if you want the job, take the job, and approach it from, you know, proudly. That's what I would say, because it just does my head in when we get this rubbish from managers who've been and gone, and then it becomes a myth. You know, like all this stuff about managers who, what is it? It's a poison chalice. Well, sorry, but if you go back, Gus Poyet went to Real Betis. Dick Advocaat
went to Holland and before that Fenerbahce. Sam Allardyce managed England and then got a job at Aston Villa. David Moyes has found himself at West Ham. So don't tell me that it's a reputation ruin and poison chalice, because these people have gone on to have good jobs after they've left Sunderland. The only one who hasn't is Di Canio. And I think we all know the reason why he hasn't got another job, because he's a bit of an idiot.
Yeah.
They probably come back now.
Well, the only thing I wonder about is what's said when they have these meetings. How does Martin Bain or whoever sitting around the table sell the club to these people? Because for me and you, I know, like, we're Sunderland fans and we're slightly biased, we're all red and white glasses on, but everybody else, like Phil Neville's like on about how big a club it is and what an opportunity it is and all that. And yet you've got these other guys going, McInnes, it's not really for me, and, you know, maybe...
It's safe, though, isn't it? It's safe. It's self-preservation. And there's two different kinds of self-preservation, it seems. You either don't take the job and say it was a rubbish opportunity, or take the job and then mourn about it.
Mm.
Nobody takes it and backs themselves.
No.
Everybody, you know, he talks about, you know, this dark forces almost type mentality, and it's getting tiring now, so... I think a lot of fans are thinking, if you're going to come with that, you know, we don't want to hear it, you know.
We had all those years where the problem we had was that we didn't have this amazing, in brackets, identity.
Mm.
Now we've got this identity, unwanted identity, as the boys in Chalice, and we're still in the air. Still in the same boat.
It's not really based in fact.
No.
I mean, it's based in... You know, fiction based on opinions. Yeah, we haven't been very good.
Yeah.
But Sam got a tune out of them.
Mm.
And we went at the end of that season with 2 defeats in 12. And we lost to Leicester and West Ham, I think, were the two teams we lost to in that run of 12. We drew at Liverpool. We drew with Arsenal. You know, we beat Chelsea. It frustrates me because people have had opportunities to make things better. And instead of doing that, they've bottled it.
Yeah.
You know, and if you can't look at the squad, regardless of what people say about budget in January, if you can't look at that squad where you've got now and see you get a better tune out than Simon Grayson, then don't bother coming, because you haven't got, you need a bit of backbone.
But
even
going back to Moyes rewriting history, you know, they can come out with a trot out the same old line that there's something deeply wrong within the heart of that football club. Yeah, you can trot out the same old line that you don't think Martin Bain's doing a good job. Trot out the same old line that Ellis Short's like not batting the managers anymore. None of those three things can account for spending the money that David Moyes spent on Papi Dilibodji. None of those three things can account for David Moyes persistently sticking with Adnan Januzaj when he had the heart the size of a pea and the backbone of a jellyfish. Not, you know, sooner or later, somebody's got to call David Moyes on the fact that he's trying to rewrite history and say, hang on a minute, yes, there was other things wrong with the football club. How do you explain that? And how do you say it's not your fault? Because it is, he's got to hold his hands up.
Go back further than that, you know, Jeremy and Lentz coming in, you know, he can't even get... He's in bother. Is it Besiktas he's gone to?
Yeah.
He's in bother there. I mean, they call him overweight. He hasn't played. Saying he was refusing to go on the pitch as a substitute the other week. You know, he was essentially our record signing. I mean, I know people say it was Ndong, but, you know, the fee for Lentz was to rise to 15 million. So, you know, there's a lot of... But anyway, we're going to have to finish because we've gone over time.
Dear me.
I know, it's good. That was good, wasn't it? We churned that out and we haven't even talked about the game at the weekend. I think it's indicative of the situation we're in that we haven't actually got onto the game because I think we're also focused on who the new manager is going to be, and with the international break we've had no football, and the press conference hasn't been today.
Yeah.
So we might have had something more. Hopefully, Ndong will be back. You know, hope McNair might come in. You know, but regardless, I think all eyes are on the football club and making that right appointment, and let's hope. When we come back on Monday, and let's hope when you come and see us at the Peacock before the game on the weekend, when we're joined by David Priest, get yourself along there about 1-ish, come down and we'll have a lovely old chat about potentially, if it is Heckenbottom, he's good, he knows some stuff about Paul Heckenbottom.
He's good anyways, David, he really knows his stuff.
But hopefully when we come back on Monday, and then definitely by the time we've talked about the Villa game on Thursday next week, hopefully we're talking about what the new manager is going to do after two victories for Sunderland on the back of Robbie Stockdale's good work. That's what we're hoping is going to happen.
Let's hope so.
And let's hope we beat that record. But thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
Wise Men Say, Sun FM Preview Show, with Stephen Goldsmith and Gareth Barker. All things Sunderland.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.